Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, Text Number 43. Patim Paramadharma Patim Paramadharmagyam Vaidarbhi Malayadhvajam Premna Paryacharat Hitva Bhogan Sapati Devata. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The daughter of King Vidarbha accepted her husband, all in all, as the Supreme. She gave up all sensual enjoyment and in complete renunciation followed the principles of her husband, who was so advanced. Thus she remained engaged in his service. Purport. Figuratively, King Malayadhvaja is the spiritual master and his wife Vaidarbhi is the disciple. The disciple accepts the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Guru Ashtaka, Sakshat Dhuritvena, one directly accepts the Guru, spiritual master, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should accept the spiritual master not in the sense that the Mayavadi philosophers do, but in the way recommended here. Since the spiritual master is the most confidential servant of the Lord, he should be treated exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master should never be neglected or disobeyed like an ordinary person. If a woman is fortunate enough to be the wife of a pure devotee, she can serve her husband without any desire for sense gratification. If she remains engaged in the service of her exalted husband, she will automatically attain the spiritual perfections of her husband. If a disciple gets a bona fide spiritual master, simply by satisfying him, he can attain a similar opportunity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So towards the end of this narration of King Puranjan, Srila Narad Muni is bringing the analogy to its perfect conclusion as to how a soul who is lost and forlorn in this material existence, trying to extract some enjoyment from matter, ultimately becomes frustrated, and it behooves such a foolish conditioned soul to accept the shelter of a representative of the Lord, the spiritual master. As they say, intelligence agencies. One of the meanings of the term intelligent means having inside information. So intelligence means, as we know, that which controls the mind. But another meaning of the term intelligence is also inside information, ability to gather inside information. So they call CIA, KGB, Mossad, all these are known as intelligence agencies. And in India also we have the Intelligence Bureau. That means they have inside information. And based on the inside information which these very powerful agencies have, through all of their gathering mechanisms, then powerful governments take decisions, decide policies, take steps as to how the country can be secure and progress forward. Similarly, as far as the material world is concerned, the general population is coming across information which is external. People are striving to level best to enjoy the sense objects. Only very few rare souls have access to the inside information. And therefore, the intelligence agencies of the Lord, they are trying to give us information as to the real nature of this material world. And unless we access information from such sources, we will simply spend our lifetime in misery. So therefore, Gita, Bhagavatam and all these literatures, they contain inside information. They are part of information which can strengthen our intelligence. And in this way, we can give up our enjoyment propensity. And so Bhagavatam says, Bhukta bhoga parityakta drishta dosha cha nityasha. So all of us are observing every object in this world only with one vision. How it can benefit me? How I can enjoy this situation, this person, this thing, this object? So our vision is contaminated with the desire to enjoy. So that is known as bhukta bhoga. So when we give that up, parityakta, and why should one give it up when one gets this reports from the intelligence agencies that actually all of these are enemies and they are only going to harm you and destroy you and make you frustrated. So give up this material enjoyment. And when we get information from such agencies, then drishta dosha cha nityasha. Then we are able to see the dosha, the fault in this process of repeated sense enjoyment. And when we do this, neshwarasya ashubham dhatte sve mahimni sthitasya cha. Then the soul is actually situated as an Ishwara. He becomes independent. Independent of what? Independent of the influence of the modes of nature. So the whole concept of independence is defined in the Bhagavatam. Sva Ishwarasya ashubham dhatte. When he gives up this desire to enjoy, when we give up the desire to enjoy sense gratification and material objects and relationships, then the soul is actually situated in its real glory. Sve mahimni sthitasya cha. And this information is being given to us through the literatures. And in order to explain to us what these literatures contain, Krishna sends his representative. And this representative of the Supreme Lord is known as Guru, the spiritual master, who is a devotee of Krishna, who is representing Krishna. And Krishna has a very close, confidential relationship with this personality. In the third canto of Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila is describing the process of meditation on the deity form of the Lord. And in that he is explaining that when we are meditating on Lord Vishnu, he starts from the lotus feet and then he ultimately comes to his arms. And he says, Bahum cha mandara gire parivartanena nirnikta bahu valayan adhiloka palan sanchintaye dashashataram asahya teja. When we meditate on his arms, then there is a special feature in the Supreme Lord's arms. He says that the Lord's arms is decorated with ornaments. When we look at the form of the Lord, we see effulgent, resplendent ornaments which meets our eye. Bahumscha mandaragire parivartanena nirnikta. So this ornaments of the Lord are effulgent and they are shining. So when we see the shining ornaments of the Lord, we should know that there is a philosophical lesson for all of us by seeing these effulgent, beautiful, resplendent ornaments of the Lord. So Lord Kapila is asking this question, how these ornaments of the Lord have become so shining, resplendent, effulgent? Bahumscha mandara gire parivartanena. So when the churning of the milk ocean was taking place, so the milk ocean churning took place because the devatas or the demigods were in trouble. The devotees of the Lord were in trouble. And the devotees took shelter of Krishna. And Krishna took the side of the devotees, of the demigods, and participated in the churning process. And as a result of this, the demons were defeated. The nectar was churned out and given to the demigods. So Lord Kapila is explaining that the Lord's ornaments, which were covering His arms, when the Lord was churning this ocean and His ornaments were hitting against the Mandara mountain. Bahumscha mandara gire parivartanena. When the Lord was churning, all of His ornaments were being polished against this Mandara mountain. They were scrubbing and rubbing against the Mandara mountain. And because of this rubbing against the Mandara mountain, it developed that shine. And from that time onwards, the Lord's ornaments are always shining. So as soon as we see the shining ornaments of the Lord, it should give us hope. It should give us this feeling that yes, the Lord always tries to help the devotees and protect the devotees. And this is the significance of the shining ornaments of the Lord, that is always trying to get nectar for the devotees. That means the Lord considers His devotees to be His own. Nirinikta bahuvalayan adhilokapalan sanchintaye dashashataram asahyateja. So not only is He personally helping in supporting the devotees, but He also has in His hand a chakra which has 1,000 spokes, which has unlimited power, asahya teja. And that is known as the Sudarshan Chakra, to protect the devotees against the demonic forces. And shankham chatatkara saroruha rajahamsam. And He has a beautiful shankha in His hand, which looks just like a beautiful white swan floating in a lake. That is for giving auspicious blessings to His devotees. And then in case, in spite of understanding all this, if one does not take shelter of Krishna, and one still remains anti-Krishna, tries to oppose the Lord, then the next verse, it also explains a very important point. Kaumodi kim bhagavato daitam smareta digdham aratipata shonita kardamena. The Lord has in another hand a club. In case one is not sufficiently impressed with the other arms, then with this arm, the Lord is trying to create the impression. See this. And that is the club. Kaumodikim bhagavato. So this club of the Lord is known as Kaumodiki. And the word being used is daitam. Daitam means very dear. And this club, amongst all the four, is very dear to the Lord. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, why it is very dear? Because the Lord loves smashing the demons. Daitam smareta. And how does it appear? So the Lord's club appears reddish. It always has a reddish tinge. Why? Digdham arati bhata shonita kardamena. Because the Lord is constantly smashing demons, so the club is always smeared with the blood of the demons who have been smashed. So therefore it appears reddish. So for the devotees, when they see the ornaments, they feel inspired. And when the demons, they see the reddish club, they should feel inspired. That we should not become part of that. And then the last two lines gives a conclusion of both of these aspects. Mala madhuvrata varutha giropagishtam chaityasya tattvam amalam manimasya kanthe. And he has a beautiful flower garland which is always surrounded by humming bees. And on his neck, chaityasya tattvam amalam, he has a beautiful pearl necklace. And it is filled with white pearls. And these white pearls signify whom? Chaityasya tattvam amalam manim. These white pearls signify the souls who are pure. So chaityasya means consciousness. Chaityasya tattvam. These white pearls on the Lord's neck represent consciousness. But what type of consciousness? Amalam. That means they represent the pure devotees. So the pure devotees of the Lord are held by the Lord around his neck. The Lord loves the devotees so much, he protects them as his life and soul and strings them around his neck. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, that is the great fortune of the pure devotees, that they are personally protected and taken care by the Supreme Lord. So in this way, the Lord has a personal connection with the devotees. And therefore the pure devotees of the Lord, they are confidential servants. And hence, they have access to the most confidential information. And hence, they can understand exactly what is the purpose of this creation and what does the Lord want the conditioned souls to do. They can interpret all the data of these intelligence agencies perfectly because they are directly empowered by the Lord. And hence, these great souls, they spread out in all parts of the universe and engage in the task of reclaiming conditioned souls. And that is known as the Guru Tattva, who are representing the Lord in his confidential service. Now, the second part is, how does a soul get connected to such gurus or such spiritual masters or those who are representing the confidential mission of the Lord? So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a 6-step process which is described as to how the soul is expected to get connected to a guru or a spiritual master. First step is inquiry. One has to inquire. The process of inquiry is the most fundamental principle. So as far as inquiry is concerned, this refers to inquiry about what is the goal of life and how the soul can ultimately reach the spiritual world. Inquiry regarding the real welfare of the soul is what a guru can give to a conditioned soul. There can be various types of inquiries. In every subject matter there are inquiries. So Shukadeva Goswami, in the second canto, is giving the standard of inquiry and is saying, Sarvam etaccha bhagavan prichrate menuk prichrata. Please explain to me, dear Shukadeva Goswami Maharaj, all the things which I have asked and all the things which I may not have asked. But the whole principle is, you know what is best for me and whatever is necessary for me to achieve the ultimate destination, please explain. So basically, a soul who inquires from a spiritual master, he inquires for the purpose of achieving perfection in life. He inquires for the purpose of getting out of the material world. That is the purpose of this inquiry. Otherwise, Srila Prabhupada was explaining, inquiries are being done everywhere. And even the scientific community is doing inquiry, research, trying to find out what is going on. Like recently I was giving an example in one of the college programs that by the Lord's supreme arrangement, there are various species of life which have been endowed with various powers. So there is one bird which is known as a ruby-throated hummingbird. And this weighs only 3 grams. Only 3 grams. And it is basically born in North America. And it has a specific characteristic that it flies every year from North America to South America across the Gulf of Mexico. Now why it travels, nobody knows. But every year it has this pattern and it flies a span of 1,000 miles. And it flaps its wings 60 times every second. A bird which is only 3 grams in weight. And so, in the course of its entire journey, it flaps its wings 6 million times. Without stop, non-stop. So several scientists became intrigued. And they wanted to do some research. So they caught some of these birds, put them in their lab and created all kinds of models and started doing some kind of research. They started inquiring how it is possible, how it can go for such a long distance without being tired. And then after all of their calculations, after 5 to 7 years of research, they came to the conclusion that according to the energy levels which this 3-gram bird has, this journey is impossible. That was their conclusion. That the bird cannot make its journey. And they published papers. And the papers got awards. But the bird is continuing its journey. Irrespective of what the papers are saying. So as far as inquiry into this world is concerned, if we use our defective senses and try to inquire, we cannot understand and appreciate even what is there in this world. What to speak of inquiry about things beyond this world. So as far as inquiry of things of this world is concerned, even for that, we need the vision of the confidential information of the Gita and the Bhagavatam and their representatives. Otherwise, we cannot understand even how this world is functioning. So therefore, Parikshit Maharaj is explaining, please, dear Shukadeva Goswami, explain to me whatever is necessary for me to know about this world and beyond by which my life can become perfect. Another point is, why one must make such inquiries? So generally a person inquires about something because he wants to duplicate success. If somebody has managed to enter into some college, so all the other students who want to enter that college will ask him, how did you do it? If somebody has made 1 million rupees, so others will ask him, how did you do it? If somebody has won some post in elections, others will interview, how did you manage this? So basically, as soon as someone gets some success in a certain field, others want to inquire so that they can also follow in their footsteps. So similarly, Vyasadeva is inquiring from Narad Muni that, my dear Lord, after those Bhaktivedantis instructed you in the science of transcendental realization and you left for the north, what did you do? And how did you actually get this realization? Please explain to me in detail. So Vyasadeva is inquiring from Narad Muni, and this inquiry is so that whatever realizations Narad Muni obtained, Vyasadeva can also obtain. So, in spiritual path, when we are inquiring from exalted devotees, when we are inquiring from spiritual masters, then a certain level of realization they have achieved. And if we also follow the similar formula, we can also get similar success. So the point is, whether we are interested or not. As Prabhupada said, speak as I have spoken and do as I have done, and you will get the result. So that is the purpose of inquiry. to actually obtain success following in the footsteps. Another reason is to attain perfection. On the bank of the Ganges, Maharaj Parikshit is sitting. So many sages have assembled from all parts of the universe. Maharaj Parikshit offers very humbly his plea. Please tell me what is the duty. Explain to me what I should do in life. And then Shukadev Goswami Maharaj appears there. Maharaj Parikshit offers him a nice seat, washes his feet, and then after glorifying him with sweet words, asks him this question, that please tell me, atah prichhami samsiddhim yoginam paramam gurum. I am interested to know how to achieve perfection. And I want to know, purushasya hayat karyam mriyamanasya sarvata. I want to know, what is the duty of a person at every moment in his life, and what is the duty at the time of death? These are the questions which one should be asking. To obtain perfection in a certain field, you have to approach authorities and ask them. Otherwise, it is not possible to get the secret. And he is saying, mriyamanasya sarvatha, and especially at the moment of death, when it is so difficult to remember Krishna, how is it that one should lead one's life? Giriraj Maharaj was giving a lecture, and he was giving an example in his lecture about the difficulty of remembering Krishna at the time of death. And he was quoting an example of one of his godbrothers. And he was saying that this godbrother of his, he was a grihastha, and one day he was traveling in his van, and somehow, as he was crossing a railway line, his van got struck. And the train was approaching. And as hard as he could try, he could not again start the vehicle. And at that moment, somehow he felt that this is a new van I have got and I should not lose it. I should try my best to take it out. So rather than thinking about himself, he was thinking how I can save this van. But by that moment, the train had approached very close. And then suddenly he panicked. And he thought to himself, I should think of Krishna. So he started chanting Hare Krishna, started thinking of the Lord. But as the train approached further closer, and as he was about to hit the van, suddenly he thought, what will happen to my wife? Who will take care of her? And that was his last thought. And boom, there was the accident. Now you know what happened. Otherwise you would not know what he thought at the last moment. He survived. And after he survived, he was expressing his story and he was saying that it is not so easy to remember and focus oneself on the Supreme Lord. And then he told his family that this is what happened, that I was thinking of you. And they were advanced and they chastised him. Said, you should improve your japa. You should become more serious. And he was expressing to Giriraj Maharaj and asking him how I should prepare now that I got this experience and I could see that I'm not ready. So Giriraj Maharaj writes his realization that all of us have to make this check. Are we ready? So Maharaj Parikshit had a definite notice. 7 days, 7 nights, Takshak is going to come. And the easiest thing to do for Maharaj Parikshit would be to plan and scheme in various ways how to kill this Takshak. But totally detached. Atma jaya sutagara pashu dravana bandushu rajya cha vikalinityam virudham mamatam. All these various sources of attachment he had given up. And he was sitting and trying to meditate on how to hear this Harikatha with great attention. So therefore he was inquiring from Shukadeva Goswami, and this inquiry is for the purpose of achieving perfection. For achieving mundane perfection, people are so serious. They spend so much of their time and energy, they are so focused. So what to speak of achieving the ultimate perfection? It is not possible for us unless there is diligent, concerted effort. And then, another reason why one should inquire is very interesting. Kathayasva Mahabhaga Yathaham Akhilatmani. Shukadeva Goswami is being requested by Maharaj Parikshit, Kathayasva, speak this katha about the Supreme Lord's glories, who seated in everyone's heart as the Paramatma. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, Maharaj Parikshit is situated on the liberated platform. Still he is requesting to hear this katha again and again. Why? And in this purport, Prabhupada explains, Maharaj Parikshit is requesting to hear this katha repeatedly so that he can be free from the effect of offenses. He wants to continuously engage and absorb himself in hearing and chanting so that he can get immunity from offenses. Having realized the futility of material existence and dedicating oneself to Krishna consciousness is the first step. But then once we come in the association of devotees, then another set of challenges begin. And that is how to protect oneself from offenses to devotees, to deities, in other ways. And therefore absorption in Harikatha and Harikirtan provides a very good immunity against these offenses. And so Prabhupada is explaining in this purport. And recently in Pune we were having a program and Radhasham Prabhu was giving a very nice example. And many times we find that having come in the association of devotees, we find that things are becoming difficult. Our mind is sometimes rebelling more than what it was doing before. The initial days of Krishna consciousness appear to be very rosy and very nice and happy. And now in the association, things seem to be more difficult and more challenging. He was giving the example of driving. That suppose you are given a car, and you are given a huge, big football field, empty football field, and you have to drive. So to drive in such a football field is so easy. You can do whatever you want. The scope for accident is very less. I mean, if you are determined, you can do something with the car there also. But generally, it's much, much more simple, and you can drive freely in any way you want. But if the same vehicle is taken and put in the middle of a road, heavy traffic, and there are vehicles all around, and he drives in the same fashion as he was driving in the football field, then he'll be finished. So when he's driving in heavy traffic, every moment he has to have his feet on the brakes. He goes a few meters, brake. Few meters, brake. So then, someone who is used to driving freely on freeways, they may find this experience frustrating. And generally we have found that those drivers are always driving in Bombay. When they come to the super express highway between Bombay and Pune, for them it is ecstasy. Most of them find that it is like liberation, mukti, from these roads of Bombay, from traffic jams, and they hit on the pedal. And they try to drive at least at 100, 120. And the reports say that maximum accidents, they take place in those highways than in the crowded traffic lanes of Bombay. Why? Because you are driving recklessly. So, when there is too much of traffic, your speed may be appear to be little slow and you may appear to be little cautious. But it is much safer. So he was saying that when you are with devotees, you can't drive in any way you want. You have to take care how you behave, how you deal with all the devotees with you, around you, and make sure that your driving is safe. And sometimes there may be honking from behind more, and sometimes the vehicle in front may be a little slow, so you may become impatient, and you may feel, what kind of driver is he? Why can't he drive properly? So, when one is in the association of devotees, the chances for offenses is more. Like in a super highway, hardly anyone has time to scream at anyone while driving. Right? Only time he will scream is when he has an accident. But on a typical crowded traffic way, you will see that so many people are screaming at each other, shouting at each other. And each one is convinced he is right. So basically, when each one of us is wearing the spectacle of false ego, we are convinced that our point of view is correct. So someone is wearing a yellow spectacle, he sees the whole world yellow. Someone is wearing blue spectacles, he sees everything blue. Someone is wearing red spectacle, he sees everything red. And as long as these spectacles are on, no two people, they can agree upon any principle. Because each one is wearing a spectacle. So if you take a white cloth, and then someone is wearing blue, someone is wearing red, and both are fighting, what is the color of the cloth? So the solution is what? Solution is not to engage in some kind of material negotiation, but to remove those spectacles. And only then they can see this. And therefore, Maharaj Parikshit is inquiring from Shukadeva Goswami, how to become free from this influence of false ego, so that I can become free from the influence of offenses. How can I develop immunity from these offenses? So this is the first step, inquiry. Second step is, once we have inquired from a great soul, we hear from him. So the process of hearing is the second step. And Bhagavatam describes that the process of hearing is compared to lighting a fire from a wood. Yatahi avihto vahanir darushu eka. So you have fire, you have wood. You take the fire and light this wood. So the fire from one source, it gets connected, and this wood, it also starts burning. So Prabhupada explains, the person in divine consciousness who is carrying the bhakti, the fire of bhakti in his consciousness, only he can light the wood-like dead consciousness of another soul. And that process of kindling of the fire of the dead wood-like consciousness takes place by the process of hearing. So when one hears, then our consciousness is kindled. And gradually the fire grows. So this is the general principle. And as a result of this, what happens? One increases his remembrance of the Lord. He is situated on the path of liberation. And then he even develops transcendental ecstasy. And references for all this are there in the Bhagavatam. So this is the second principle, hearing. How does one develop taste for hearing? Syan mahat sevaya vipra punyatirtha nishevanat. By serving person Bhagavat. The law of nature is, you develop the qualities of the person whom you serve. So when the construction of the Juhu temple was going on, at that time Giriraj Maharaj was heavily engaged by Srila Prabhupada in various services. And he was thinking within his mind, I am not getting sufficient time to study Bhagavatam. Even when I sit for Bhagavatam class, my mind is being disturbed by so many thoughts of this is to be done, that is to be done. And he was thinking like that. He didn't express it to Prabhupada, but Srila Prabhupada somehow understood. And one day Prabhupada looked at him and said, Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. So this bhagavata sevaya means not only book bhagavat, it means person bhagavat. And so since you are serving me and you are following all the instructions according to my direction, so do not worry about reading right now. Simply by following these instructions and engaging in this service, gradually things will be revealed and Krishna will arrange. And someone else asked Srila Prabhupada, out of the book Bhagavat and person Bhagavat, which is better? And Prabhupada said, person Bhagavat. So he said, why? Prabhupada said, because person Bhagavat can pull your ear and he can discipline you. So therefore, Syan Mahatsevaya Vipra Punyatirtha Nishevanat. So by hearing from the great souls, by serving them, even our taste for hearing intensifies. So the first step is inquiry and second step is to hear. Then once we hear, we have to follow the third step. And third step is apply. Follow the instructions. Inquire, hear, and then apply those instructions. And you can apply in various ways. First example is to apply as it is. Purely. Without any deviation. And the example is that of Brahmaji. Atapyata tadakhila loka atmanam tapyatam tapah tapiyam samahita. Brahmaji, he meditated, he performed tapasya for 1000 divya yugas. And then he heard this word, tapa. And although he did not see the source of this sound, he followed this instruction to the last letter. Purely, without deviating. And Srila Prabhupada explains that this shows that he had the right vision. Therefore, Brahmaji is described here as Divya Sahasrabdam Amogha Darshana, transcendental vision. So, when the instructions come, whether the person giving the instruction is present or not, if the source is bona fide, considering that instruction to be infallible, one should follow it. As Brahmaji followed, he did not see Krishna, but he heard this instruction and followed it. So that is the first principle of application. We have to apply purely. The second principle, while applying the instruction, is one must apply with due meditation. One must not apply things blindly, but must meditate. And the example is that of the Prachetas. Yaduktam patidrishtena girishena prasidata tatadhyayanto pudayantas japantascha samyata. So the Prachetas were instructed by Lord Shiva. And Shiva told them that these are the mantras you must chant. And this is the process you must follow. Having heard the instructions from Lord Shiva, what was the response of the Prachetas? The Prachetas accepted these instructions and tadadhyayanto japantascha. They would meditate on these instructions. They would repeat these instructions amongst each other. And pujayantas, they would worship these instructions. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that one should unhesitatingly meditate about the orders and instructions received from the spiritual master. And one should not be disturbed by anyone else or anything else. There should be constant meditation as to how one can apply these principles according to time, place and circumstance. So this is the second principle. In fact, Prabhupada says, one should be so absorbed in meditating on the instructions of Guru that one should not even consider whether he is going to go back to Godhead or not. Even that should not be a consideration. And third principle is, one should apply the instructions eagerly. Eagerly and faithfully. And Swayambhuva Manu explains to Kardam Muni, Dishtya Tvayanushishtoham Kritascha Anugraho Mahan Apavratair Karnarandrai Dushta Dishtyo Ashati Gira. He says, Dishtya Tvaya Anushishtoham. So Swayambhuva Manu is expressing to Kardam Muni that I am very grateful to you. So all of us know that Kardam Muni, he was approached by Swayambhuva Manu, and then Kardam Muni spoke certain words to Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu's daughter Devahuti was to be given in marriage to Kardam Muni. So Kardamuni glorified Swayambhuva Manu and gave him instructions as to how a king should behave and rule. So Swayambhuva Manu is explaining this in response, that I have been instructed, it is my great fortune. Dishtya, it is my great fortune. Toya anushishtoham, that you have disciplined me, you have given me instructions. Kritascha anugraho mahan, and it is great anugraha upon me. And apavratair karnarandhrair, and I have heard these instructions with open ears. And hence, jushta dishtya ushati gira. So Prabhupada says, what is the meaning of hearing these instructions with open ears? Ears are always open. You may wear earplugs only for japa. Ears are always open. So Prabhupada is questioning. The ear holes are always open. So what is the meaning of saying that hearing with open ears? Apavrate. So hearing with open ears means, Prabhupada gives a very fantastic statement. The mercy of the spiritual master cannot be obtained by any part of the body except the ears. If one has to receive the mercy of Guru, it can be done only through one organ of the whole body, that is ears, most importantly. Right? And what does it mean to receive from the ears? A bona fide Guru instructs a disciple. He knows the mentality, psychology of a disciple and engages him accordingly. And then he says, okay, you are fit for deity worship, you are fit for publishing work, you are fit for preaching, you are fit for management. And in this way, he gives instructions to each disciple according to what is best for him. And when that disciple takes those instructions, that is the meaning of hearing with open ears and then applying it. And so Prabhupada says, this combination of instruction of Guru and faithful execution makes the process perfect. Therefore, he says that such a Guru instructs his disciple publicly, not privately. Right? He gives instructions, and these instructions are not something which is confidential. He engages him in service. And Srila Prabhupada is the best example how expertly he engaged so many devotees in Krishna consciousness. How expertly he dovetailed their propensities in serving the Lord. And this is the meaning of following eagerly and faithfully the instructions. So this is the third step of applying. And then one comes to the fourth step of service. So, we contemplate a plan to apply and then we actually start serving. And as we are serving, what do we get? Two benefits one obtains by serving. And the first is one receives the unlimited divine spiritual mercy of the Lord. Simply by serving, even if one is not qualified, one is endowed with all the benefits. So Kardamuni was married to Devahuti. Devahuti was daughter of a great king, emperor of the planet. Devahuti had spent her whole life simply in the palace of Kardamuni. And she was not used to staying in the forest and performing austerities. She was not used to a lifestyle of austerity like yogis in the jungle. She did not have that previous experience. In one sense, we can say that she had the conditioning of a luxurious, opulent lifestyle. And she was married to Kardamuni. And Kardamuni was living in the forest in a very simple manner. And he spent his whole time meditating. And they did not even have a house. So from one point of view, Devahuti had no previous experience of being austere, of being simple, of living without a proper abode. And therefore, it was so easy for her to complain and say that my conditionings are too strong. I cannot continue with this relationship. It is not possible for me to engage in service here. So from our point of view, we can see that even as brahmacharis, all of us have certain conditionings. But the kind of difference in lifestyle which any brahmachari is experiencing now is nothing compared to the change of lifestyle which Devahuti had experienced. And she was serving Kardamuni very faithfully, very nicely. And as a result of that service, Kardamuni became very pleased. And then, when he came out of his trance, he spoke this to Devahuti. And he said, Yeme swadharma niratasya tapah samadhi vidyatma yoga vijita bhagavat prasada. He said that, my dear Devahuti, although you may not know anything about austerities, and you may not have so much power as far as yogic processes are concerned, but swadharma niratasya, because you have engaged in serving me faithfully, as a result of that service, vidyatma yoga vijita bhagavat prasada, I am about to bestow upon you bhagavat prasada, the mercy of the Lord. Why? Because you served me. And tanevate mat anusevanaya avaruddhan, this mercy of the Lord which I am about to bestow upon you cannot be in any way, shape or form stopped by material circumstances. It is spiritual, transcendental, powerful. And drishtim papasya vitarami abhayan ashokan. Just see this. And he gave her a vision by which she could see all of those transcendental opulences which she was about to obtain as a result of her sincere, faithful service to her husband, Kardamuni, who was also her spiritual master. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that a spiritual master of a disciple may be greatly advanced in austerity. He may be greatly advanced in his ability to control his senses, in his levels of realization. And a disciple may not have such facilities, or he may not have this kind of a benefit, and he may have certain conditionings. A disciple may not be so advanced, he may not be coming from a similar background. A spiritual master may be too powerful and a disciple may be too weak. But if he simply engages in faithfully serving the instructions of such a guru, simply by the power of that service, he gets the same benefits by the mercy of such a guru. Because the guru has the power to bestow those benefits. So one person may have earned some money and another person may just be in a position to inherit that money. But still, money is money. So if one simply serves faithfully, the spiritual master can give that inheritance if he is pleased. And that is the whole principle of service. So therefore there is no question of competition in spiritual circles. If we simply serve faithfully the spiritual master and his other disciples, then more advanced devotees can bestow their mercy on less advanced devotees, and in this way, everyone can advance peacefully and go back home, back to Godhead. Generally, the feeling of envy comes, as Giriraj Maharaj explains. He asked Srila Prabhupada, why does this envy come? I think envy is useless. And Prabhupada said, yes. Why? Because generally people in this world are used to dealing with limited things. There are limited positions, there are limited facilities, limited resources, and unlimited desires. And in India, too many people trying for a small number of posts. Either it's a college admission or an employment opportunity, government job, or a seat in the train. There is always unlimited people and limited opportunity. So we just get used to the concept of competing. Unless we do something and outdo, we are not going to make it. And we are practicing bhakti also in such cities. So therefore the similar mentality creeps in and we feel that even in bhakti the same principle applies, that there are limited seats in the spiritual world and there are unlimited people trying, and therefore someone else's entering into the spiritual world may jeopardize my position. So Prabhupada says no. There are unlimited seats in the spiritual world and unlimited devotees can be accommodated. So someone else's advancement towards the spiritual world is in no way impeding my progress to the spiritual world. In fact, by his progressing to the spiritual world, if he prays, then Krishna will take that seriously and the Vaikuntha airplane will again take a U-turn, come back, take me also. And even another person can go back home, back to Godhead. So Prabhupada says, if you have to use your envy, then use it against non-devotees and preferably Mayavadis. And you can do that by preaching Krishna consciousness strongly. So therefore, the opposite of that is serving faithfully, submissively, without trying to obtain that position, but simply trying to assist. And by doing that, one gets all the mercy. As he says here, Yeme swadharma niratasya tapah samadhi vidyatma yoga vijita. Devahuti was not advanced in tapah. She had not achieved samadhi. She had not studied scriptures. She did not have vidya. And she was not knowing the principles of yoga. But Bhagavat prasada. Why? Because I have decided to give you, no power can stop me. So if we simply serve without any duplicity, then when the Guru gives his mercy, that Bhagavat prasada, then all of one's desires are fulfilled. And the next verse says, next reason, or the next benefit of service is, one overcomes the four defects. If we simply take these instructions seriously, we are in a position to overcome the defects. And Brahmaji is explaining to Kardamuni, I am very pleased with you because you are following these instructions without any duplicity. And therefore, you are overcoming your four defects. Accepting the orders of the Guru and applying it sincerely is the process of overcoming four defects. So first we inquire, then we hear, we apply, and then we serve. And as a result of that service, the next step is satisfaction. And one satisfies Guru. So when Guru is satisfied, so many things happen. Number one, one gets so much of power, spiritual power. And that canto, Brihaspati is telling Indra, Janati Bhagavan Kshatra Unnaterasya Karanam. Why the demons have become powerful? Because they have served their Guru strongly. And so by the mercy of their Guru, Shukracharya, they have received that power. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, even if disciple may be insignificant, if he serves and satisfies, he gets the benefit of becoming powerful. And secondly, Krishna explains to Sudama, how by serving Guru, one can become free from debt. One can become debt free. The debt, rin. And thirdly, it is pleasing to Krishna as described by Prithu Maharaj to the four Kumaras. And sages are explained to Suta Goswami, Tattvatastat anugrahat. We want to hear from you, O Suta Goswami, because you are perfectly qualified. Bruyu snigdhasya shishyasya. Your spiritual master have been satisfied with you and therefore given you that potency. And so we want to hear from you. So this is the fifth step, that one satisfies the Guru and gets all of these benefits. And then one may think that this is the end of it. That after satisfaction, what else is there? But that is a very important concept. And the last concept is, not only we must satisfy, but last is consult. And that is the sixth step. So what is the meaning of consulting? That means, an example is given. The Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took shelter of Ishwarapuri and he gave him the Mahamantra. And as he was immersed in chanting the Mahamantra, he became mad with transcendental ecstasy. And as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chanting and dancing in ecstasy, he approaches Ishwarapuri and is explaining this at a certain point in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Pagala hoila ami dhairya nahi mane eta chinti nivedilun Shri Guru Charane. So he is explaining to Ishwarapuri that Pagala hoila ami, I have become mad. I have become mad and dhairya nahi mane, and my mind, it has become very impatient with this ecstasy. Ete chintin nivedulun, taking this thought, this request, or this doubt, Guru Racharane, he approached his Guru. That why my mind is becoming mad with ecstasy. And then he says, Kiba mantra dila gosai, kiba tara bol, japite japite mantra, korila pagal. So, kiba mantra dila gosai, what mantra you have given? And kiba tara bol, and what is its power? Japite japite mantra, as I am chanting this mantra more and more, korila pagal, it is making me mad. And this was the Lord's doubt. Right? More he was chanting, the more he was becoming mad. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that Lord is showing by his perfect behavior that although he is in the stage of ecstasy, he is going to his spiritual master and asking, why am I in ecstasy? And Prabhupada says, when we have doubt at any point in spiritual life, one should refer the matter to Guru for clarification. And although he had developed a kind of spiritual ecstasy, he was in the liberated state, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was showing the principle of referring everything to the spiritual master whenever there are doubts. And in any condition, even in the stage of ecstasy, we should never consider ourselves independent of the instruction of the spiritual master. But as soon as there is doubt, one should refer to him and feel ourselves totally dependent at all stages in Krishna consciousness. So this is the last principle of consulting. So Lord was in ecstasy and he was asking. Right? So pagala hoila ami. And many times we also feel that we are going mad. But not in ecstasy. But we have so many problems. Right? And japite japite mantra korila pagal. As he was chanting japite japite, he was feeling more and more maddened. Our problem is japkite japkite mantra. We feel sleepy. Right? And others think we have gone mad. So, we have to consult at any stage and never feel ourselves independent. And this is a very important principle. And in this way, the process which begins with inquiry and then goes on to hearing and then applying and then service and then satisfaction ultimately should always be complemented with consultation. And in this way, a disciple makes a strong connection with the spiritual master and by his mercy enters into the spiritual world. So this is the principle which is being described in this verse and purport. Through the example, through the allegorical story of Malayadhvaja, of how by serving a guru one can overcome all the conditionings of previous life and simply make a success in spiritual life. Are there any questions? Yeah.
You are mentioning about the different stages and culminating in consultation. Sometimes when a devotee is serving under a particular spiritual authority, he might have an understanding that probably the spiritual authority, these authorities are a little too busy and they might have many responsibilities. So a devotee might try to share some responsibility and might think it's not needed to consult and for every trivial thing. And so how do we know, when do we balance that we need to consult? Because practically for everything it's not needed. So how do we balance that particular situation?
Yeah, like one time one devotee was going on asking Prabhupada various questions and Prabhupada suddenly stopped him and said, "What do you think I am, a question answer machine?" And then Prabhupada said, "Use your intelligence." So the principle is that if one is sincere, most important principle is sincerity. If one is very, very sincere and humble, he will know when I have to consult. And if he does not know, at least if he is living in association, 10 other people will tell him, "You should consult." Right? So we don't have that problem. If you are in association of devotees and you have a problem, it is not that everything is alright and suddenly one day problem manifests and then it explodes. No. Generally, one's consciousness becomes degraded gradually. And that is seen, perceived blatantly by others, and they may give feedback, and if one does not act upon that and take shelter, then one will be in difficulty. It is quite natural. So therefore, here we are talking about a principle, and according to time, place, circumstance, you have to apply it. So here, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had the good fortune of directly consulting with Ishwarapuri, who was with his guru, who was his guru. So in ISKCON, we may not always have that facility of consulting on every trivial matter or detail or doubt with directly the Diksha Guru or the spiritual master who has given initiation. But so there is the facility for other Shiksha Gurus. Guru means any personality who is representing the Supreme Lord and facilitating your progress back to Godhead. So if anyone who is helping you understand Krishna consciousness more deeply, overcome your anarthas and go back home back to Godhead, he is representing the same tattva. He is concerned with your spiritual welfare. So if you consult him, and there is a facility provided, there are so many systems like counselor system or these kind of systems by which you can actually approach. So the principle of consultation is still maintained, but the manner in which it is applied in modern day life in ISKCON may vary. But the principle is being respected. Otherwise, why there should be so many systems of taking care of devotees? So therefore, one has to follow this principle and know that at some point or another, if one feels he needs to consult, he should immediately do so. And therefore, this graphic example of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been given, that one should not feel that only in the initial stages of bhakti one should feel this dependence. But as one advances and one feels that he can become independent of the need to consult superior authorities, then that is a very dangerous position. That is why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even when he is in the stage of ecstasy, he is asking, his Guru and Prabhupada is writing in the purport, no one at any point of time should think that he is independent of this principle of consulting a superior spiritual authority for guidance and progress. So that is the most important principle. And Srila Prabhupada has given us all this facility in wonderful way in ISKCON. We are very grateful that we are able to follow it in our own lives and get the maximum benefit. Okay? So I think we'll stop here. You have a question? Yeah. Madhavananda Prabhu.
I have two questions. One is a little technical, which the first one is, what is the difference between this application and serving? And second is, you said, give the example of Devahuti, that she was used to live in a palatial building and her feet never touched the ground and always walked on the carpets, and still suddenly she is in a place where she is in the forest, no oil for the hair, not taking bath, very drastic change. But she could accommodate that because she was a highly exalted soul. But here we see that such kind of treatment, or such kind of sudden situational change, may actually, the person may just go back to the material world.
Mm-hmm.
How much to push, basically?
So Prabhupada writes these two things as separate. He gives one category as following the instructions, and then he gives another category as serving the instructions. So basically what I understood was, as part of following the instruction, it involves making, your proper plans and developing the proper determination and equipping yourself with the skills and vision required for executing that general order. Right. And then, when you actually execute that I, in my estimation, according to the things which I read, is what I am perceiving as service. When the actual process begins, so you receive an instruction, you hear an instruction, then you are thinking there are 100 ways in which you can apply it, so then you decide, meditate, and then come upon a certain way. So you have to, preach in such and such a college, and college preaching is banned there. But you have to preach. So then you have to meditate. What are the ways we can do it? So that may take some time, and there are so many pros and cons available. You have to, distribute books in these countries, and you cannot enter into these countries. It's not allowed. So you have to think so many ways. And then when you actually do it, then the service begins. So service actually begins one step before, at the contemplation stage. And secondly, as far as your second question is concerned, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given us the formula that one has to take care of body, his physical needs, his emotional needs, and then his spiritual needs. So it is not that we are saying just take care of spiritual needs. There is no room for physical needs. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he explains that in our temple, anyone who comes, he gets wonderful prasadam. Right, there was one time in Africa, and somebody was asking Prabhupada that, you want me to join ISKCON, but then what will happen? And this boy in Africa, he was telling Prabhupada that we have a system in Africa that when I get married, then in Africa the system of dowry is opposite. The boy's party pays the dowry to the girl's party. So he was asking Prabhupada, now I want to get married after some time after joining, then who will pay my dowry? And Prabhupada said, you don't worry about all that. So here you are taking shelter, and we will provide. And he was assuring him. And then when the time comes, this is an international society, so there are so many girls available, so there is no problem. But you just join and you become peaceful in Krishna consciousness. Prasadam is being provided in the temple. So you understand that the physical needs are being met. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada has taken the Bhagavatam and the Gita and given us a modern day setting. And that's the reason why temples in the West, he was making in such a way that anyone would want to come and stay there and not feel the difference. So many people would tell, why you are making such these kind of temples? As that man was asking Prabhupada, that why you are building big, big temples? Right, sadhu should be, you know, living under a tree. And Prabhupada put his stick in a hole or a crack in the ground. And Prabhupada said, I can live here. I can even stay here and speak Gita and Bhagavatam, but who will come here to listen to me? So therefore, in order to attract people, I have to make these kind of buildings. So Prabhupada already applied that in principle and created this nice facility. So he had a system of distributing books in the West, getting the money and building temples here so that people would get attracted and stay in these places and hear and chant. Like Giriraj Maharaj explains, one time Prabhupada had an appointment with the mayor. The mayor of Bombay came to meet Prabhupada in Juhu. And that was the time some money had just come in from the West. And Prabhupada had, you know, so much of money all around him. And he was counting to see whether all the money from the book fund has actually come for the construction. And the mayor entered. And Prabhupada was peacefully counting the money. And the mayor got a shock of his life. And the devotees thought that Prabhupada will stop now and start speaking to the mayor. But Prabhupada continued counting and said, so, you are the mayor, please, we are very honored to have you, sit down. And he continued counting all through the conversation, speaking Gita to him. And he was quite bewildered. But then Prabhupada, he had the vision that all of this money I am going to use for building temples where devotees can stay comfortably and not feel the pinch. And they can understand, yes, the ultimate goal is to serve Krishna. So whatever it needs to keep the mind peaceful, he has provided in all of his wonderful temples. Right. So that is Srila Prabhupada's special benediction to all of us. Otherwise, it was practically impossible for any of us to take this philosophy from the books and apply it in alien conditions where favorable facilities are not available. Where we would be practicing Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki, I go Pramanande.